Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, button mashers and combo breakers. Welcome to the table, and thank you for joining us. My name is Jared, and joining me today, the Smash Bros themselves, Brian and Michael Toth from Toth Games.
Awesome, yeah. Hey everybody, my name's Mike. Here with my brother Brian from Toth Games, coming to you live from beautiful California.
Hey, folks.
What else I was supposed to say.
Excited to be here.
No, you're good. No stress. Today, we will be learning a little bit about these two guys, their backstory, as well as their upcoming game, Legends of the Arena, which will be launching on Kickstarter August 26th.
A little background about ourselves. We started working to make a board game that, you know, we always wanted to play back in 2017. It's been a journey. We had never made a board game before, but we knew we really wanted to capture, like, you know, a team game, a brawling game, and a lot of action. And it really inspired by some of our favorite video games, obviously Super Smash Brothers, but then also, you know, character design from like MOBAs and other games that we were playing and really enjoying. And so the way Legends of the Arena works is you and your team, it can play up to six. You can also do free-for-all. Each person gets a unique legend with their own set of cards, which are their moves. From your hand, you kind of queue up three moves each turn, and everyone's doing that simultaneously. So it's a bit of a queuing system, simultaneous reveal. And then, yeah, you just get right into the action, knocking each other back and forth until someone flies off the edge.
Awesome. That's so cool. Well, welcome, guys, and happy to have you guys here. It's I think you guys are interview number two for us, so well on our way.
Wow, what an honor.
Yeah. So I know, I don't know how much you guys listen to the podcast, but we always have like an opening question that fits around the theme of whatever game that we're talking about. So you've kind of, before recording, you told me you're not the most intense Smash Bros. Players, but I am curious if you have a go-to character that you like to play.
Samus, easy, all the way since 64. With a little sojourn into Meta Knight, of course, you know, when Brawl was out, and a little bit of Pike, but mostly Samus. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Brian is the more serious Smash player, which, you know, he's already pretty casual. I would say, like, similarly, I was drawn to Samus, just the charging the orb and hoping someone drops down so I can absolutely blast him was a great feeling and one of the few things I actually could do. And similarly with Brian, I was given Meta Knight during Brawl because I was so bad that made it even. But I think, like, if I were to play now, or when I do play now, Captain Falcon is my, like, go-to. I just love his sound effects and his animation, and I don't feel as bad when I charge off the edge, you know. I feel like it's
I love that. That's awesome. And what about, do you have a favorite moment or greatest accomplishment in your Smash playing history?
So for me, you know, with my friends, we would always play like free-for-all, and there are two guys who are like way better than everybody else, right? And I mean, obviously we're in someone's basement, right? And in the Midwest, so just nothing else going on. And I think there's one game late enough at night where, like, I guess they just weren't paying attention. Anyways, they forgot to take me out before they started duking it out. And so I just, like, I put down the controller and I just got really quiet, and they were just so locked in. They didn't know I was there. And I think it was like Dr. Mario versus probably like Peach or something. And this would have been like, this went in Melee, I think. And no. This went Ultimate, I think. And anyways, they just like battled it out, got down. You know, one of them wins. One has one stock left and like 300%. And then I'm like, aha, I was here all along. And, you know, stole that win. So not exactly the most impressive, but, you know, I think it's the only time I won in that particular group.
No, I think that's still cool. That's awesome. What about you, Mike?
I think it's telling that neither of us are very good at Smash, which is why we're making a board game version, so we can finally get
even
the dub.
Level the playing field.
That's right, yeah. I will say, I just briefly, my favorite moment was like the first time I really, someone showed me Fox and I got into actually playing the character. I had this beautiful just streak of like, no one could touch me. And I was just dodging everything. And similarly in a free for all. And I just remember yelling like, nobody can touch me. And everyone was just chasing me. And they gave up fighting each other to chase me for like a solid couple minutes. And then I got obliterated. But for a few minutes, I was a god. It was great.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, thanks, guys. Love getting a little bit into the theme and all that. What was it like in the Toth household growing up? So obviously you're in California now, but you mentioned the Midwest. So there's a journey in here somewhere.
Yeah, so we've been playing games against each other like forever. There was a brief sojourn into chess. Terrible game. Don't need to revisit that game ever. That's for sure. Risk for some reason. Like, I guess our parents didn't get the memo that like, this is not a fun game for the whole family. And so that was brutal. It was brutal. And then at some point, I would say when we moved from like St. Louis to Pittsburgh, we're playing a little Pokemon, like maybe one or two tournaments, but then we got like into competitive Magic in Pittsburgh. And that was really the arc there of like, oh, really learning matchups, really learning the meta, kind of having to spar a lot. And also when we're kids, we weren't really super differentiating between like video game versus board game. It was just like, we both like games and we like to play them sometimes against each other, but more often like together, you know? So there was a lot of, I guess you got into like MOBAs a lot, and then Overwatch was big as well. And, as well as, you know, RTSs and that kind of thing. And so like, I think our backgrounds kind of blend a lot of those in there. And then, well, you should talk about Star Wars Epic Duels, but yeah. So we just played a ton of stuff together, I think. And that was kind of what started us on the journey to eventually make something together. Cause I think we have a very similar like taste and like very similar kind of like looking for that same kind of gotcha moment, that kind of like elation of like, you know, getting the outplay, you know, figuring out what they're going to do, getting the hard read.
Yeah. And I think Brian totally hit on it, though. Like the game, I would say the pivotal game of our childhood that we just lucked into, our mom found at Target and bought, was Star Wars Epic Duels. It's this discontinued asymmetric fighter on like a square grid, and you're playing as, you know, one of the Star Wars characters. So and I think one of the things that, like, you know, for us in our early game that, you know, it kind of blew the or introduced was the asymmetric and then the double blind. So each player's putting a card face down, so you don't know what your opponent's playing. And so there's that bluffing, there's that read, as well as they have hand management mechanics, stuff like that. But I think, like, I loved that game. I played the crap out of that game, and I still have it, and it is busted up, and you can't find a copy, but I'm gonna, you know, that's the inheritance.
So we used to be pretty even in that game, right? And then like Michael took it away with his friends, and they would just like go in the lab and work on it. Okay. He comes back, he's like, pick anybody, and I'm like, well, my main is Yoda, so I'm doing Yoda. And he just like, he knows all the counter picks now. He's like, well, Vader, no problem. And I spend the whole time chasing him around the board while he just does direct damage. He's like, Vader can just like chuck debris at you, and like,
that's right, yeah.
Like Yoda just needs you to hit him. He's all about the like reflection and the defense. And I was like, what? What is this, Michael? This is no fair.
It's not very lore accurate, right? Like, imagine like Yoda chasing Vader around and Vader just throwing stuff at him while he runs away, but it works.
I feel like the other game we got to mention, because y'all just covered Battle of Hoth, which is in it's so Mike, you remember Battle Cry?
I do,
yeah,
course,
so it's, yeah, it's in the Command and Colors series. Yeah, so that was one of the first games that Michael really got into modifying, actually.
Okay.
Was nice. So like way back, Battle Cry is like the Civil War entry, and I know Memoir 44 I think was like way bigger, but the fundamentals are the same. But
yeah, it was kind of interesting deep diving into that a little bit to kind of see how many exercise that Command and Colors system, because I would have other listeners reach out and be like, oh yeah, I really like this one or that one, and I'm like, wow, this runs deep. So yeah, for sure.
It does. It's a really cool system. Yeah, I had a teacher really into the Civil War. We lived in Pennsylvania, so that kind of tracks. And I remember trying to like make different maps and, mm-hmm. you know, find different like ways of organizing the little units. But I think that is another one that I feel like we lucked into, you know, where.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one that's really like stood up to the hobby market over time, right? Like some of the games we played back then, like Attack or Lionheart, like no one knows what those are, and they weren't that great, but they were at least maybe not super mainstream, but the a couple of them, it's like people are still enjoying to this day, which is pretty awesome.
For sure. So obviously there's lots of games that go into the inspiration of Legends, and I can already hear it in the passion from Epic Duels and the blind bidding. And that's so cool. I didn't even think about that when I was demoing y'all's game at Gen Con, but thinking about it now, I'm like, oh, that totally makes sense why they would bring that in. When you're coming together and you're saying we like A, B, C, and D games, and those really speak to us, was it a thing of, okay, let's try to throw these together, or do we want to just pull specific elements and then throw it on a whiteboard and then go from there? What was the conversation before the design process really got going?
So I think it kind of started with like a void of like, there was a game we wanted to play, especially at the time. Like, I think we're playing a fair bit of like Overwatch, and just like, and we had just come off of MOBAs, and like the whole kind of team hero shooter, right? Everyone's got the asymmetric powers, but you're working together against another team. And it's like, why can't we do this in like board games? And it felt like there just wasn't really, there's so many great 1v1 board games, right? Like you've got Magic, you've got, I guess, chess, if you have to count chess. You got like,
I mean, we could list a lot of games.
The team thing was really tricky. I think a lot of games, when you add more people on each side for board games, they just get that much longer, or even more, like kind of the complexity sometimes scales like exponentially as you add more stuff to the board. And that's kind of where the Epic Duels tie-in came, because one of the modifications Michael had made with his friend group was like, how do we tweak this game to play, like, I think even up to four aside, right?
And yeah, we did a four.
Nice.
And so it's like, okay, like maybe there's something to this, right? If we start from that system, and like, obviously there are some, you know, kind of interesting ways to take that and make it a more like modern flair, right? But that's sort of where it started from, was we had this idea of like this experience we wanted to have, like feel like, oh yeah, our team is dueling, not just like one person versus one, and not like a tag team, right? But the whole group is in there, different powers, you know, I pull them in, you punch them out, kind of thing.
So who came to the other with this idea, or was it a conversation that took a while? I mean, I know that for us, Ian was the one that really kind of started this with, I want to start a podcast. And I was like, well, I can do that, but what are we going to talk about? So I'm curious for you guys, how did this conversation get started?
Well, it's certainly been a while. It has to be Brian, because I feel like Brian was trying to make games even when we were kids, whereas I was mostly just trying to, like, I wasn't thinking about making a game when I modified Star Wars Epic Duels to support eight people. I just knew I had eight friends or seven friends, and we all wanted to play. And sure. I think it had to be Brian. I don't remember though, so maybe Brian does.
Yeah, I think it must have been. I think, you know, we were certainly playing a lot of games at the time, and there's definitely some like, yeah. So it's like we wanted to play this kind of game. I think we even tried a couple of games on the market that were like kind of known to be team, and they just weren't quite hitting for us. And it was like, you know, I think we could just do this, right? Like, I had made a terrible little TCG when I was in middle school. You know, I'd made some like video games. I'm like, you know, I think we could. We got the chops, right? You know, we've played enough games. Certainly, it's all in there somewhere. We just need to take it out. And I guess both of us were kind of, we're like, yeah, we got a little free time. You know, let's just go into it. I don't think we knew what we're signing up for at all, right? That was 2017, a long time ago. Yeah. But
sure,
like, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, and so I'm hearing a lot of cohesion, a lot of on the same page. I mean, I've got a brother, and I know that's not always the case. So have we had to navigate some hurdles along the way in the way of different vision and things like that?
Yeah. And to this day, you know,
like I can
the
imagine.
Last call we had was as a back and forth,
you know, yesterday, and right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally yesterday. Yeah.
Art is very tricky.
I can imagine. I mean, I can imagine the whole process. I was even thinking today as I was getting ready to talk to you guys tonight, I was like, man, I can only imagine like the amount of different choices that go into a Kickstarter, let alone the game or anything that comes before it. Just this final piece, right, before you guys jump online to show the world what you've got, you got to go through all these different choices. So I can imagine, even though like this conversation we're having right now, I can already see the chemistry you two have as brothers and the way that you spent so much time together. There's got to be some things. So how do you overcome that? How do you make those decisions with somebody that you've lived with your entire life, but you also have a vision for what you want it to look like.
Yeah, I think one, so, you know, just being upfront, right? Like, is we've stumbled into a lot of these things, but what we found that kind of like works for us, there's a whole bunch of things, but just picking the first one that comes to mind is like, there's board games are a lot of work. Like, it's a ton. There's so many things that need to be done. And so I think having like trust and like confidence in your partner, like having enough that you can like, it's kind of like delegating, but it's more just like accepting that whoever is doing this thing is just going to do it, and like not needing the, to come back and get consensus on everything. And like, whoever's doing the thing is just going to take it and run with it. And it, that's what it's going to be. There's, we really tried to limit the number of things that needed consensus. So like art was something we each had a veto on, and it took forever. And that's part of the reason why.
Sure.
But if we tried to do every part of the game like that, I think we would have never gone anywhere, and it took us long enough. And so I think for a lot of like the mechanics or the character ideas or the board, it would be about like somebody coming up with something and then bringing it to test. And that kind of leads me into the second thing that I think worked really well for us is like, we just met once a week, minimum every week, even when we had nothing. I mean, there was a lot of times we were just playing video games and calling it market research. But there was also quite a bit of like, you know, the having that cadence and having the like kind of time pressure of like, okay, I'm doing this thing. I need to show up with this thing, and they're going to just kind of like accept it, and we're going to test it and go back and forth on it. But yeah, I think those are kind of the two big things that come to mind.
Yeah. One other thing is the, like, you know, we made basically four versions of this game before this version. Like, this version itself is really just about 2 years old at this point in terms of like the base system, but there were like four previous to that, all trying to get to that same goal. And every time we kind of had to pivot out of one of those, that was pretty tough. And so we relied a lot on like external testing. So going to conventions, going to playtesting nights, and putting in front of them, and not trying to be like, do you like Michael's version or my version better? But, you know, just, you just put in front of them, like, you know, no comment, right? Just you got to watch the body language, right? Like, are people leaning in? Are they like, or are they kind of, they checking their phones? Like, what is the like mental state? Are people having a good time? Are people kind of engaging with it? And some of the earlier versions, it was like not consistent enough. Some people would be there, some people wouldn't. People would go in and out, and that made it a lot easier to make those kind of tough calls instead of being like, oh, it's my idea versus your idea, or it's like, you know, why do you want to change this still? It's a lot easier to be like, well, you know, that took 1 hour and 30 minutes, and, you know, half the time people just zoned out, and, you know, it's, we have to try something else, right? And so obviously that's a pretty difficult way to make decisions. You don't want to like run every single tiny piece of art or copy or graphic design through that kind of process. But yeah, for making the big choices, it's really got to be coming from, because like in some ways you're always gonna make a game that the two of you like just by default, but then is anyone else gonna like it? That's what you gotta like really dial into.
How hard was that? Because I know you said 2017, right, was when y'all started. So how hard was that to let go of whatever that original vision was to get closer to like, oh, people other than us want to play this?
I still got all the cards from the original prototype, man.
Every Michael, prototype. Do you stand by it? Do you stand by prototype one?
No, it had.
So to briefly describe prototype one. Prototype one was played on like a grid, just like a grid. And it was okay. Actually mostly a deck builder. And you built from a common deck, like a common pool. And so you'd start with your characters that were a little bit asymmetric, but they would rapidly like converge to whatever was strong from the center pool. And it was kind of interesting, sort of, but it did not at all feel like a hero thing. It felt like sort of a game of chicken almost, where it's like, you know, you would be trying to, your build would be very clear because people see what you're trying to take, and the other person could either counterpick that, or they could just try to disrupt what you're doing. And almost in some ways the board was almost perfunctory because the game was all decided by, you know, who could control the trade row better. And I don't know, it was kind of interesting, but that one I don't think ever got out of like our apartment even. Like
and if it had, it would have been much shorter lived, I think. But it did introduce the tension, kind of a fundamental tension of our game that I think to some degree is still there, right? Where it's like, is this a board game or is this a card game? And one of the reasons why we decided to cut the deck building is because we're like, we want this to be a board game. We want the board to matter. We want the tactical feel, the positioning. And like, if you're doing a deck builder and you have a board game, now you're doing two things, which some games, you know, can ask people to do two things, but it's...
They're often pretty heavyweight, right? Like, I think about like Mage Knight or something, where it's like, yeah, that game does do both, but, you know, it's a big experience.
Sure. And Michael, you and I were talking about it before we started. The industry is just not in that space where we can do 3 and 4 hour games. I mean, there's some, but really it's how much can I pack into an hour? And I want it to be as deep, but I also want to wrap it up in an hour.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, it's easier to design a shorter game, you know, because it's like you focus on one thing or a handful of things and you're like, we make these things really, really good. Instead, because sometimes you can find yourself in this weird zone where like, oh, some people like this part of the game and some people like that part of the game, but no one likes the whole game. And what you've done is you haven't made a cohesive game, you know, at least in our case. And so like now when people like our game, they like the stuff about the game. At least I'm finding they like the stuff about our game that we want them to like, you know, like they're not getting distracted by something else. I think that was like a really tough conversation because we didn't know that that was the tension at the time, the board versus the deck building. And so instead it just felt kind of frustrating and hard and painful.
But then it was like, I guess it was like this eureka moment. And then I'm sure it kind of flowed after that. And it kind of, you're like, oh, we actually have something here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. From, you know, to the next one. But then, you know, there were several eureka moments. And I think like about 2 years ago, we had maybe our last real big eureka moment. Okay. And that was around the action queuing system, which like really helped us solve the problem of how do we have players like get to express their like combo and their turn, but how do we also present the information in a way where like people aren't overwhelmed? We had these cards that had a ton that you could combine with each other, but each card was doing too much and it was really hard to read, and people
They didn't have the intuition. Yeah. You know, it's like not the simplest cards, right? And I mean, Jared, you played it because, you know, the simplest cards are like step or punch or back or whatever. It's just, it's very like intuitive for people who have ever played any kind of like digital fighting game. And so people just almost take those for free, right? They don't need to really think about it. They just like imagine and then they pick the cards. Whereas, you know, before we were trying to cram so much in there, it's like, oh, this is your like frost feint. And it would do like 5 things and move you across the board and like, I mean, you could imagine that being a move, like a like some kind of super move with like a complicated input sequence, but it's not maybe intuitive. It's something you'd have to learn. And when every move is that way, when every move is like a super move, it was people kind of bounced off it a little bit, right? They would just end up feeling like they're playing rock, paper, scissors because they would just pick based on the symbols or the iconography more so than what they could imagine happening.
No, I think that makes sense. And, you know, thinking about as you described that, the other thing that comes to mind is it's not just that one card with the game that you've got. And I know we're kind of jumping ahead to the game itself, but you've got the fact that you're picking 3 cards for yourself and you're working with teammates. So now you're thinking about potentially 9 actions all at one time. And how do these cards cohesively work together? So if those cards aren't intuitive, you could be sitting there for 20 minutes talking about your turn.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. It's like it's how much time do you want to spend reading your partner's cards as well as your own cards?
That's right. Okay. Well, I had one more question before we kind of pivot to the game itself. So obviously there's you guys. Do you have shout outs for other members of people that might have worked with you or things like that you want to go into a little bit before we go to the game itself?
Yes. I mean, the artists, we got to start there because they've done an amazing job. So Christian Araba did a lot of the initial concept stuff for us and a couple characters. He's done some work on like League of Legends type stuff. I think it really lined up well with the feel we're trying to get. And then Gunship Revolution did a lot more of the art because it's a very art heavy game. And so we just needed like a ton of throughput there. And then our graphic design, Morgan from Jovial Graphics helped us really organize things, come up with a lot of the iconography. And then on development, we actually had like a couple of groups helping us out. We had Game Weaver Games out of Georgia. They did a lot of work with us, especially like they were on campus. And so that was great because a lot of the folks who really just immediately gel with the game are like, you know, 20 something or 30 something. And then then also locally, a couple developers worked on it as well. And yeah, speaking of locally, big shout out to Golden Gate Game Makers, which is like the local playtest group. And
okay,
like there's events almost every week. And yeah, without them, we totally would be, you know, way behind, right? Like we've done a lot of testing on TTS and stuff, like online. Sure. That's been valuable, but in person, you just can't beat it. And so having this whole infrastructure of like both professionals and people who are hobbyists and people who like have never play tested before in their life and kind of getting that whole range of feedback has really like accelerated our process.
That's awesome. We were talking with Game Weaver at Gen Con for a little while and just kind of learning that side of the industry. And it's so cool to learn different aspects of this industry. But just to see the way all these different things come together to create a game. I mean, we talk about the designers themselves, but obviously there's so much more that goes into it. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm curious just on that front. Did you know any of these artists going into it? Did you just happen to find them? How do you get connected in those spaces?
So art was really tough. Michael mentioned the Vito thing, right? We probably looked through like 200 art stations, DeviantArts, Kairas, just like profiles and be like, yeah, that looks cool. But like, is that for our game? Or, you know, I like this one. Let's see if they can do more of that. And just like, and then reaching out, probably reached out to like probably 20 of these artists, right? After like reviewing all these and like kind of going back and forth, like, are they even available? Do mm-hmm. they want to do a board game? Like just like so much kind of back and forth. So that was really tough because it had to be something we both liked and also fit the game and fit like what people expected. And we definitely did a little bit of like, you know, putting art on the cards and showing it to playtesters and stuff and kind of getting their reactions. There were some early versions that were much more like fantasy driven and maybe more looking like a D&D source book. And then when we switched over to the more like Street Fighter inspired, people were like way more kind of in tune. They're like, yeah, this is who I thought I was. This is what I thought I was doing. And so that was super helpful. But yeah, that was pretty much just like straight up just scouring the internet, you know?
Okay.
On the development side, that was a bit more interesting because like locally, Brieger Creative is one of the groups that helps run the local playtests, and they do a lot of development on like kind of really large titles. So like River Valley Glassworks or Cartographers. And so they put us in touch with Game Weaver because they okay. knew each other as developers because it's a small world of game developers. And they're like, you know, I think these guys would be really good to look at your kind of title. And so that's how we got connected there. But it's a small industry. And then, I mean, the development side is like, you know, super small.
Yeah, for sure. And I think some of us, a lot of people just kind of assume development's done in-house and you don't think about hiring a dedicated developer to come in and just look at your game. And I was like, this is brilliant. Like that was throughout the entire conversation with them. And so they did a great job. I mean, they really sold your game well. And it was a good time.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's been some of the games you see come into development, they look nothing mm-hmm. like the final product, you know, like when they're picked up as a design, the developers really do some serious legwork. And then also on like expansion content and stuff, like a lot of that is really the developers are the ones who have like really mastered the system and like figured out how to extend it to the next level.
Sure. So the last piece of a team, you guys decided to take on yourselves, which is the publishing aspect. Was it always the plan to self-publish, or was there a point where you were pitching this to other publishers to see if they would bite, or what's kind of that story there?
It was always a possibility. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah, publishing was definitely always a possibility, and we did talk to a bunch of publishers. I think for a number of reasons we decided to do it ourselves. I don't know. I think Brian might have a better answer than me though. So I don't know.
Yeah, it was a difficult decision, right? When we're like, no, we do this ourselves, but ultimately it kind of came back to the vision, right? Where it's like, we've got this very specific thing we want to make and like this very specific void, this team PvP thing. And kind of the only way to make sure your vision like comes through kind of exactly as you imagine it is kind of do the self-publishing route. And I don't know, there's like so many great publishers out there, and we talked to a few of them, and everyone was super helpful and super understanding throughout the whole thing. Like they gave us a lot of really good feedback, a lot of which ended up in the game. But yeah, this we realized at some point, like this is our passion project and this is something that like is like so special to us because of sort of everything we put into it and how we wanted it to achieve that, you know, achieve that vision, right? We're like, we need to see this through. And it certainly adds a lot of work, a lot of new skill sets, right? Like, you know, if anyone out there is thinking like, oh, I can make a game, like, absolutely. And like, you can publish a game, absolutely. But those are two separate things. So, you know, budget time for both.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I can imagine that there's a whole, I mean, I can't even, you're probably talking to distributors and trying to figure out how to get things made and where you're going to make things and how you're going to get them all put together. And I'm sure it's a whole journey just by itself. So good on you guys for taking on that journey and to keep it. Because I agree with you. If you had given it to a publisher, they would make changes that you wouldn't like, and then it's no longer just yours. So good on you guys for that. All right. Let's shift to the game itself. So either one of you guys want to give me a quick overview of how to play this game of Legends of the Arena?
All right. So in Legends of the Arena, on your turn, you pick three cards from your hand and you put them in a stack in an order face down. And then once everybody's done that, you turn them face up one at a time and you resolve them from the highest speed to the lowest. And so kind of all your strategy, all your planning is coming that upfront step. When you're picking those three cards, you talk to your allies, you speculate about what the opponents are going to do. Once you're locked in, once you've turned up that top card, the cards will largely drive the action on the board. There's a couple choices you get to make, but that's where you're going to do your throw up your blocks, dodge out of the way, take a big swing, try and knock them out. And then once we've gone through card one, we do card two, card three. And after that, all of the black border cards, so your basics, those are your punch, your back, forward, dash, that kind of thing, they come back to your hand. Your special cards go to your discard. There's a bit of a cooldown mechanic there. And you also have an ultimate. That's a once a game thing. And then you draw the top card of your meter. That's your deck. The bottom card being your ultimate. And then you're just back to the top. So it's really all about landing hits. As you land hits, you drive up fatigue. When your opponent's fatigue is high enough, they get pushed further, a lot like your damage percent in Smash. And when somebody is pushed so far they go off the edge and can't make an edge grab, they're knocked out. In the 1v1, first knockout wins. In the 2v2 or 3v3, each team has a budget, usually like two stock or three stock. And once those are gone, your team is out. But either player can respawn out of that pool. So players aren't like eliminated till the end. And then in free-for-all, it's the first person to score two knockouts. So anytime you knock someone else out, you get a point, but they just, you know, respawn in the center and keep going. So it's everybody at the table the whole time and largely simultaneous. And yeah, that's most of what you need to know if you're ready to jump in.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. We got to play 2v2 when we played it. I only got to play once, so like I'm kind of trying to temper not having played enough to really judge the game fully. But I quickly was like, I think this will be my favorite way to play this game, like because it's enough where you can engage your teammate, but it's not overwhelming of getting that third person involved. But I think there's a chaotic fun in that as well. So I could see lots of different avenues depending on the type of game that you're playing within Legends. Do you guys have a favorite battle mode?
Yeah, it's 2v2 for me for sure. Yeah, I think that's like we when we do play Magic, we don't play so much these days. We play a lot of two-headed giant, which is the 2v2 format in Magic as well. And so I think like there's something, and obviously Ryan's a great partner in those sort of things. And so it is nice to have a partner. I think 3v3 is really fun. We haven't gotten to play enough 3v3. I think that's the tricky bit with it. But yeah, 2v2 is great. I think there's a lot of combos that work really well. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, I don't know, it's easy enough for me to see ahead to the rest of the
board. And we designed around that a lot too, like with the play time. With the 2v2, it should come in about 40 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. And yeah, that's just about the length we wanted for the game. And just, yeah, about the amount of complexity in terms of pieces on the board and things you have to consider. You know, the 1v1 is a lot of fun, of course, but it is pretty intense. Like it's just right. You and them, and you kind of have a feel for what they can do and they have a feel for what you can do. So it's a lot of like, how do I model my opponent's brain? You know, what's the read, right? Whereas in the 2v2, like you said, a little more chaos. So yeah, it's we absolutely designed with like that 2v2 in mind.
For sure.
I'm glad you got to play the 2v2. Did you win? The real question.
No. So Jonathan chose my wife Anna as the one that he played with, and she wins most games. So it was unfair from the start, but I knew what I was getting into, so it's okay. But we had a good time, and I really enjoyed it. And you can kind of see what you're talking about with that control versus chaos of even in 2v2, you kind of see both. Because you can kind of put your plan together and then you think you know what your opponent's going to do, and then they do something completely different, and it feels you feel like you've lost control very quickly, mm-hmm. and but then the turns are quick enough that you can take that hit and then turn around and try again, which is something that I really like because it adds to that video game feel of, okay, they got that combo in, let's try again. So how do you, as a game designer, walk that line? Because if a game loses its control and goes into full chaos, then we're just participating and watching, not in actually playing. And if you have too much control, then it feels like chess. And so how do you find that balance?
Yeah, the control thing's really tough because, you know, I think one of our big inspirations was like Gloomhaven, because they've got that system, right, of playing your cards face down altogether. But it's like the human players, right, are the ones doing all that coordination. And so when they like perfectly solve a room, they're like super happy about it. Everyone's happy. The monsters are the only ones losing, right? But when it's like two teams, if one team solves it, the other team is not solving it, right? So
That's right.
Can't have that level of control, you know? And so I think for us, and then another layer too is like a lot of it is the dialogue. So it's like as you play one time against a team, then the next time you come back to the table, you've got some idea of what their predilections are, what they're going to do, right? And then it kind of starts building on itself, and that's awesome. But for the first play, it also still has to work, right? So even without that kind of like dialogue annoying each other. And so
yeah.
A lot of it came down to like the specific cards we put in and like the kind of pressure valves. So I think like dive is a big one where it's like it's the dash. You go right to them and it always goes directly there regardless of where you are and where you're facing. And so like facing matters in this, kind of like in Smash. Mm-hmm. But we gave everyone sort of like a get straight to melee card. And it doesn't always work because you might melee and then they might on the subsequent turn step away having anticipated that. But we found that was like a super important card for kind of bringing people together. The other thing was like making sure there's enough turning opportunities to make sure you're facing the right way, so your fireballs are going the right way and stuff. And we just, to be honest, a lot of it was trial and error, right? We would just that like dial it up, you know, put in more turns, put in more like kind of heat seeking effects or things that have a lot of range or things that forgive you a lot for missing, right? And then we would put that in, we'd play it, and we'd see how the meta evolved, and then we'd tune it down a bit. So a lot of it is just kind of by hand, right? But
sure,
after a while, we got a bit of an intuition for it. And another thing too that's nice is with the special cards, because they are going in the discard, we let those break the rules a bit. You know, like you get a special card, right, that jumps in and attacks the same turn. So it's really never going to miss. They might block it, but it's not going to miss, you know? Or on a special card, we might do something that like, it's a super fast ranged attack. So it's like before they even have a chance to get their block up, they're getting hit. And that's okay because it's got to go in the recycling bin and, you know, come back later. So I think that's kind of the line we try to play with, where the basic cards are coming back to your hand all the time. Those are maybe a little bit easier to dodge around, or they are mostly setup cards. And then we let the special cards kind of carry the weight of being the really hard to stop or really flashy effects.
Michael, you got anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would add is like the other thing in the like kind of chaos to control sort of thing that we can do is work on the like risk reward vector. So we can, you know, there's definitely characters that have very high reward attacks, but they have a very narrow range. Like great example is Hilda's ultimate is like a 8 damage attack, totally will blow someone out, but it's they have to be exactly at range too. And so I think that's the sort of thing that it's like, there's a decent amount of chaos just kind of built into the game. So you have to really, really feel like you have the read before you're pulling that out. She also has some other tools in her kit to set herself up. But in general, I think that's the other way we kind of do it, right? If a move is incredibly consistent and safe, it can't be powerful.
Sure.
And I think that helps as well.
One thing we do in our testing is like, if one person plays face up, the other person should always be able to win. Always. Like,
okay.
No matter how far ahead you are, whatever board position, if one of us is like, here's my play, and the other person can't figure out that puzzle, then we know we put something in that's too strong, right? So, okay. I mean, even if it's like really unlikely that you'd pick the perfect sequence, as long as there's some way, you know, after the game, we can go back and be like, oh, well, if I'd just done this, and this,
yeah.
Like that's key, right?
Well, it's huge because you want, you know, there's so much on that first time, the second play, that you really need to hook in your players and say, this is what we're presenting. Yeah, you're not going to pull off the perfect combo on game one, but you can see the potential of that combo. And you don't want players to look at this and either say, well, that was too hard and I don't know how I'm ever going to do it. Or I don't want to look at it and be like, well, your character was awesome, but my character was super difficult to play. Which kind of segues into the question of how do you, it's not just about balancing characters anymore. It's about letting them feel balanced. And so I imagine that comes up in playtesting a lot when you're having these PvP battlers, especially on a team where different combos come together. So walk me through that a little bit. What went in there to be able to make that happen?
Yeah, I do think part of it is also like guiding people to the character that's going to fit them. Because especially like things pulling from like Overwatch or different MOBAs we've played is like so many people, they find their main and they're just a one trick Roadhog. Right. And so I think like you put them on someone else, you put them on a Tracer, they're going to be terrible. And so I think like helping them, you know, both visually, but also we have like information on the back of the card, give people a sense of what it is. I think that guiding them to the right character helps quite a bit. Brian's got an example right in front of us.
Nice.
But also like, I'd say designing characters so that they like each one does have a thing, like a very clear defined thing they're trying to do, so you can grasp it very quickly. I think like within the first game or two, you should be doing quote unquote the thing. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of how we try to deal with that problem. As far as do the characters feel balanced, especially in early plays, I think that's a trickier one. But I know we've put in a lot of effort, so they all feel like they have the potential to be good, but maybe Brian has
I think one thing that's tricky about balance, right, is you want to balance somewhat for new players who have not played before, just pick up the first time, and they should come away being like, oh, that was really close, that was good, get you next time. But you also want it to be like when two experts go head to head, they're like, oh, that was really close, it's a good game, it could have gone either way, right? And like this is not a reality, no game is perfect here, right? Like there's always going to be those like 60-40 matchups, 70-30 matchups, 80-20 matchups, right? If we're being honest about it. But I think one thing, putting the complexity rating on the back was huge for us, like just low, medium, high. And it's a simple thing, but it really lets people self-sort. Like the people who have picked our high complexity characters and then they lose, they're often pretty understanding. They're like, well, you know, I wanted to play the tricky thing and, it got me. I think the ultimate cards have been really key there, because I think it's this aspirational thing people can look at and be like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Like maybe they didn't get to do it, maybe it missed, but they can see like, yeah, that was, you know, if I had only gotten a chance to do that one, it really guides people, you know, to like what the character is all about. And we've definitely had cases, a fair number of cases where people like want to just swap characters. You know, they're like, wait, like, let me try that. Like and so I think that's also fun when you get enough of a taste of the other person's character and you want to sort of do your own spin on it. Mostly characters can be played at least a few different ways, usually more offensively or defensively or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun to reinterpret that character with your own spin on it.
Yeah, it is really weird to see, like, because we play each other all the time, right? Most of our testing is online, just TTS simulator, 1v1s over and over again. And, like, we still to this day have very different, like, theories on how to play different characters. Like, even in the same matchup, swapping back and forth, you know? And I think, Brian definitely nerfs all my strategies, so it's...
I'll edit the cards during the playtest. It's shameless, you know? Just...
Well, that's clearly broken. No.
He's just forever on guard after what you did to him in Epic Duels. He's like, I can't possibly let this happen again.
That's true. Yeah.
No, that's cool. So I am curious, like, it's because you guys take it to another level with a team game of now we have to think about combos between different heroes on the board together. So is there anything from a guide perspective on, we would recommend these two together, or we would recommend expert players trying out this wonky combination? Is that something that's come up in conversation?
In the rule book, we do have a recommended like first 2v2, just to like, you take the four low complexity characters, you get a little bit of little bit of zoner on both teams, a little bit of like range, a little bit of melee. And there's a couple combos, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you know,
sure.
you hook someone to the chandelier is kind of the, you know, so there's a couple like things kind of preset for you there. But honestly, I feel like from testing it out, it doesn't really, it surprisingly doesn't matter. Like,
okay.
Like when we try a lot of different, I mean, there's a lot of like specific combos, right, between like these two people I want to see happen. But what we found is like, there's enough space for each like pair of characters to sort of to have a path to winning together.
Okay.
Like sometimes it is just like, oh, these are both brawlers and we're just going to jump on one person and punch them out. And like, that's all, but like, it's a strategy, right? Sometimes it's a lot more finesse. Like the guy who can mess with time, like he combos really well with some characters that have a way to sort of front load their hits. And so he can like really de-risk the cleanup basically by like, you know, getting that last hit in. He can kind of get the final say on things. And so I think there's a lot of space there, like a lot of space, but after a while we started just like taking random pairs and just playing them and being like, well, certainly one of these has to be kind of unfun or like boring. But I think it's really been the case where most everybody's got something they can like, you know, springboard off each other for.
Yeah. I would say that like, for me, the 2v2 design space is one of the more interesting things we've done, because like when you do character design, there's tons of archetypes, right, that you can kind of funnel into and design around that help the player pick up on what you're doing, but also help the characters feel distinct from each other. But one way of thinking about the 2v2 character design, which we spent a ton of time thinking about, is like, once again, you can get right back into doing archetypes, right? So if you have your zoner and you have someone with like very precision range attacks, you can combo those two together. If you have like a disruptor and somebody who like needs to be, you know, protected and do more of a setup, those two could go together. Or if you, like Brian said, you put two brawlers together, can they gang up on somebody?
Right.
And I just, you know, a note on ganging up is, since there isn't player elimination, we've made the ganging up not feel as bad as in some other games, or in just how like even Smash's 2v2 works, where you can get like knocked out and then there's just one person left. And so I think like there are archetypes you can hook into, and we have tried to, but also like Brian said, there's tons of emergent collaboration that happens that's on a much more micro scale. It's not like, you know, oh, these two cards will always go together, but it's more like, in this situation, these two cards are really strong. And the final thing I'll say is, because our game is super positional and tactical, there is a decent amount of like body blocking and taking aggro and pulling that, right, you know, will feel familiar if you're coming from the video game space.
No, for sure. I mean, as someone who's not even that deep into Smash, I could see it all over the board. And it was really cool to see, honestly, because I think a lot of times you'll see board games that'll advertise, this is just like so-and-so video game. And I think that's such a scary thing to brag, because it's so hard to translate from video game to board game or any kind of tabletop space. Because in the same way that you're moving a book to a movie, you're taking everyone's experience and their expectations, and it's hard to match all of those at a tabletop level, because you are limited in what you can do there. But I mean, props to you guys. I really felt like at many points during the game that I was playing a game of Smash. So that was cool.
That's awesome.
I am curious, because I know with a lot of team games that I've played, you don't share all information with your teammate. Whereas in this game, it's wide open. Like, I even felt weird about it for two turns, just being like, fan the hand and let's talk about it kind of thing. When did that decision come into play? And obviously you like it, but kind of talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, maybe you remember, but I feel like there was a period of time we didn't have it, and you would sit diagonally from your partner. And then did you have like a thing you would give them?
Well, yeah, so we grew up playing Euchre, which is a Midwestern kind of simplified version of bridge. So much Euchre, right? And that's a game where it's two partners and you sit a diagonal from each other, and table talk is frowned upon, but at least in our family, it was extremely common.
Sure.
So common. And so yeah, we tried a lot of like limiting the information. We like captaining, I think, is kind of the specter of a lot of those team things, right? Where it's like one person, if they never really know what they're doing, they just tell the other person what to do. And then it's like that person kind of feels a bit put out and they're not getting a chance to learn. And mm-hmm. so we didn't want to have that. And so we tried a bunch of like limiting information. We tried where it's like, well, you would play one card and then you would discuss the rest. So there'd be kind of like a half in, half out thing. There were, yeah, like Michael said, a token, right? Where you could like indicate an intent. You could pick like one of your two intents and be like, am I going to defend or be more offensive? And you pass that to your ally. And that was how you communicated. But honestly, like people, you know, when they were having fun, they kind of wanted to share that fun. They'd be like, I got this, check this out, you know? And like, so instead the route we took, we actually have a timer in the box and it's not usually for your first game, but when you're playing 2v2 teams or whatever, once one team sets all their cards, they can flip the timer and the other team has a minute left. And this was probably the most useful thing for just circumventing a lot of that, especially like the analysis paralysis side of it, where it's like, it's not a real-time game. If it's a difficult board position, both teams have as long to think as they like. But as soon as one team has got it, the other team's got to pick up the pace. That helps because then it's like, well, everyone's got to contribute to kind of pull their weight. There's too much for one person to do in that time frame. You got to work together. You know, you got to like bring your all. So that was big for that.
No, for sure. We definitely used the timer in our game. Like that came out by turn two because there was a lot of scheming. And they're like, oh, by the way, there's this timer thing. We're like, oh, that changes everything. So it definitely added an element of, okay, we're going to do this. And then like quickly slammed it on the table. So
was it one person who was like always hitting the timer or was it like?
Yeah, Jonathan and Anna were always like scheming to like the fourth dimension. And I'm just like, guys, come on, get out of here.
That's right. You need to pull out the timer. It's crucial. Yeah. Brian is definitely a bit of a schemer and I love being able to just, yeah, slam the timer and just be like, I'm going for my guy. And,
yep, that's it. So I do like that though. I mean, cause it adds an element of you break the analysis paralysis, which also comes into that simultaneous action, which I love. I love that is coming into so many aspects of this hobby. Because it destroys the downtime, and that it is does. Such a complaint with so many things. It
just doesn't have to be there, you know. It's crazy to me. Like we've all accepted that, like, you know, we kind of just space out until you snap back into your turn again. And it's like, I don't even mean to. Like, I'm not trying to be rude, but my attention span, it's not getting higher. It's only going down.
And, I get it. Well, it's like we did a recent review of Vantage, the new game by Stonemaier, the story game. And it's cooperative, but you're on all different parts of the world. And so you're like all telling these different stories and you're supposed to be like really ingrained in everybody's stories because it's supposed to all work together or whatever. And I'm like, guys, if there's more than three of us, I just don't care about what you're doing on the other side of the world. And I want to get back to my story. So yeah, you're right. Downtime is absolutely a thing. Even in co-ops, you're just like, can we move it along? So was simultaneous action always there or was it something that kind of evolved into?
Yeah, we
had turns, right?
We had turns. I mean, the battles were always simultaneous. So we started from like the Epic Duels template, which was also actually eventually re-implemented in Unmatched. So that's where some people might have yep. seen this. But it's like you have your turn and when you attack, you put your card face down, right? And that's the simultaneous part. But then you still have your turn and you might like do some tricky setup thing. You might move around a bit. And what we found is like those parts were like we just watch people, right? And we would like write down like, okay, they spent like 2 minutes just kind of rearranging their hand. And like, you know, it would be, people would like really think through all those parts that weren't the battle part, but the fun parts were always like, okay, you do all this setup, all this crazy stuff. And then now we flip, you know? And so it's like, okay, let's jump to the crazy fun part. And, you know, I mean, you need a little setup there, but what if we put that setup into the cards and that kind of, you know, helped it move along there a bit.
That's good. Okay. Let's see if I've got anything else for you guys. I got a few wrap-up things just from a Kickstarter perspective. Is there anything else about the game that you guys want to talk about before we kind of keep going?
I think like some things we didn't cover that we could certainly talk about more is like I think the way... we could dive more into the different characters we're doing because we're certainly like trying, like we're taking inspiration from not just the Smash World, but you know, from a bunch of the other games we're playing, and then as well as just trying to like break the rules with some of the characters. I guess I don't want to give them all away.
No, that's okay. I mean, I'm happy to go wherever you guys want to go with it.
But yeah, I think like, you know, some of the characters definitely lean towards more of the like chaotic element, more of the prediction element. And yeah, we just have a whole bunch of different ways we want people to play the game, and we want it to like, yeah, work okay. well for them.
Yeah, so we didn't really talk about the free-for-all, but like, you know, yep. for, you know, 2v2 is my favorite, but free-for-all, that's what takes me back to that, you know, beating Dr. Mario or whatever, because they had forgotten all about me, right? Like, the, when you put five people on this thing, it does remind me a lot of like the just the chaos of playing on a couch and all slamming your controllers as fast as you can. And it's not something we actually really designed for that much. It was something that people sort of requested, especially when we go to these conventions. We might have like three people who want to play. They didn't know each other. It's like, who wants to be in whose team? It's like, well, let's just try this out. And, you know, with a couple of little rules tweaks, it got there. And like, it is for certain groups, like that is how they want to play. You know, if you like love Colt Express, you know, if you love just like Robo Rally, like this is in there for you. And we actually like have kind of leaned into a bit more, and we've got an expansion that's coming with the Kickstarter that throws in actually some board effects. So if you're an items on Smash player, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Well, we can dial that up, you know, like it can get crazy.
We support you. We see you.
Yeah. So that's been an interesting kind of discovery that really came more from the fans than it did from us, because we were just like so much in that, like, you know, competitive, like, you know, head to head, very sweaty, like mindset. And then like people being like, well, yeah, but like, what if, you know, what if we just kind of turned it this, we looked at it this way, you know, and what if it was a bit more about just rolling with the punches? And that's pretty neat the way that turned out.
So I'm curious, Brian, were you able to recreate your epic moment of sneaking in at the end to knock somebody out yet?
No, not at all. Not in the slightest. I will say I had some pretty good comfort behind. Like I have won, like I had no KOs, and then I've gone from no KOs to winning in a single like three card sequence, which is kind of something. But I've not been able to pull off one where like everybody else does all the work for me and I just get the last hit, because we got like a last hit mechanic, kind of Dota style, right? And like the best is like somebody's like got, you know, like one person gets the KO, they've got all the push tokens on that character, they're ready to fly out, and someone else just walks up there and just like taps them ever so slightly and they get credit, right? And I've not yet pulled off that maneuver for like two KOs in the same sequence, but I'm sure it'll come.
I'm excited to hear about it at some point.
For sure.
Yeah, that's right.
But similar to that, actually, we also in the Kickstarter, we're gonna have like a add-on for the solo player, which is something that once again we didn't really think about when we were making the game, and then, you know, we had people suggest it to us and then tried it out, and it's like actually quite fun, surprisingly challenging. I think the last time you tested it, Brian, those poor people you put against the computer, it was walloping them. So we've since tuned it in, and you know, like you can beat the easy mode now, but it is surprisingly challenging and like a lot of fun. Kind of, you know, it's a bit more, at least when I've been playing it, I've been approaching it a bit more like a puzzle than like reading, because you can't get to read on a computer or a CPU opponent. But I thought that was another thing that, like, you know, it really started to cement it, like, oh, this is a real game, where people started to suggest things that we could implement that then made the game better. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a...
Yeah, I think that was it's one of those side effects of design together. It's like we always had each other to play against, so we're always just playing each other. And it never occurred like, oh, wait, I need a way to like just play a bunch of games on my own. And so, yeah, when people started throwing that in there, it's like, yeah, okay, let's try it out. And it was like, it's super fun. But yeah, it's just a different way of looking at it, you know?
So I'm really curious, because I would not have even thought to add solo to a game like this. I mean, it's very much designed to be a player interactive game. So if you feel comfortable sharing, walk me through how that works. What is the AI bot doing in this game to create that puzzle?
Yeah, so every character has their own bot, because like they've kind of got their own style, right? And so they've got usually five-ish cards. And on each of the five cards, there's usually some checks. So it's like, how close am I to you? What fatigue are you at? And, you know, have I drawn my ultimate? That kind of thing. And so there's usually one or two modes there. And then based on if it's like an easy or a hard opponent, it'll then tell you which three cards are going to queue up. And I basically designed this by like looking at what I would play in these situations as this character. Like, you know, what are some just solid moves I always want to do? Like for Alicia, it's like, yeah, I want to have a whirling leap into a smash, into a shot. It's like super offensive, try and get them pushed out all in one go. Or then, you know, there's a couple defensive plays in, mixed in there. It's like, I'm going to step, I'm going to defensive pivot, I'm going to go back or something, right? Just try and get back to the center of the board if I'm on an edge. And so a couple of these like important ones kind of pruned off some that were like, you know, a little bit too niche, too bespoke, right? Because obviously the AI is not going to cover every scenario. It's just got to,
sure,
you know, have a couple choices it makes. And then, yeah, people just shuffle them up, flip over the top one, and, you know, I'm sorry, pick their three, right? And then flip over the top one and then just play it out. And yeah, it mostly works the way, like, kind of, if you were playing against me, it's mostly what I would play in those situations. So it's
that's awesome.
You get to play the designer, I guess, is the way it works.
That's really cool, Brian. Yeah, I think the other thing that's, I think, made the solo mode for me really, like, exciting is that, you know, obviously we put some design in, so each character has, you know, Alicia has a more aggressive run at you play style because that's, she's a rushdown brawler, but the specials of the character also kind of just lean them towards a particular play style. And so, yeah, I think people have a lot of fun going up against different ones. I kind of think of them as almost like you're in the Elite Four and you're going against like a Pokemon gym master, you know, like, you know what you're going to get from Lance or whatever, but it's still like a ton of fun to go through it. And like, if you're not prepared, you will get absolutely hyper beamed out of existence. And then you have to like go back and be like, okay, like, what did I do wrong here? You know, did I clearly didn't go fast enough because eventually, you know, he builds up all the energy or whatever. And so I think that's it's a good way to force yourself to learn a bunch of different play styles because, yeah, against Alicia, she's coming at you and you have to learn to deal with that. And
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. What about, I'm curious. So obviously this is designed for solo, but could you build it in such a way where it is two players versus the environment?
It's a great question. It's a question we start asking ourselves. And
right.
To be honest, we haven't put enough miles on it yet to say like, this is a good idea. I think like we've been working on this game for 8 years. We have a pretty high bar for like what we're willing to put the stamp on. So I think like we will keep testing with it. And I think if we're happy with it, we will put that in the rules. But for now, we're just calling it solo because that's what we've tested enough to be comfortable with. I will say that, yeah, two like PvE, like 2v2 or 2v1, like it isn't broken, you know, like you can absolutely lose to them. But yeah, it's something we definitely are, or especially like if you want to play like 2v2, but you only have three people and then one person subs in a sub CPU, it's like, it's a possibility. We're kind of testing them out.
Fascinating. I'm very intrigued by this.
Yeah, I think like it would work. I think it would work better in maybe a free for all context than the 2v2. So, well, we've seen in 2v2s as well that, you know, not saying we'd recommend, but it does kind of work as like having one person play two. And I think it's certainly not the way the game's intended to be played. And it's a lot of like you got two hands, you know. But for some people, if they really want to, you know, whatever, be the puppet master, you could go for that as well. If you're shorthanded.
Interesting. Okay. And then you mentioned character inspiration. Do you have a favorite character? Do you have characters you want to talk about here, or do you want to hold out until we get to the Kickstarter?
I got to talk about my favorite character because it's Ticket, and Ticket is complicated. That is, he's the time traveler character. I got to get a picture of him here. But his whole thing is that he can manipulate the order of actions and sequences and all that good stuff. And so he plays a fourth card every sequence, and that card is purely there to bend the rules. So he's got some like kind of intro level ones where he can add an extra card to the sequence. Everyone has to add one, but he's the only one who knows it's coming. He's got one where all of his cards happen in a single exchange. So normally everyone's playing one card at a time. He plays three, but then he does nothing for the other two parts of the sequence. So he's totally vulnerable, just has no defense, nothing. But he can like do his super combo like in a second. But then his ultimate is the most fun because he does his actions as regular, you know, going forward. And then he does them all again in reverse while everybody else just kind of sits there. And so he's just, it's
that's awesome.
It's great.
That's cool. I think the Ticket's like super fun from like a design perspective because you've set up the system and it works and you're like, okay, but what if we broke it?
Right.
And it's like, oh, it turns out it's totally fine, at least in this dimension. And like it works, and you know, it p- people can do, like, I think he's the character that when we go to conventions and people play him, he's the character people consistently do the most, like, surprising things with. And so there's still a lot of ground to be explored there. And I would say he is not my favorite character, but he's a very cool character. And I think being able to break, giving people the feeling that you're breaking the rules is great. Yeah, Brian's holding up Sabo. That's probably my favorite character. I think he is...
A ninja.
He's like a zoner, and he's a trapper, and he really rewards reads in a way that other characters don't, and so that's my favorite part of the game. And so I think really, like, you know, going all in on, like, okay, all three of my cards say if you are doing, like, if you're moving there, I'm gonna totally destroy you, and if you don't do that, I'm gonna look like an idiot, but, like, I think I know, like, I have got the soul read on you, and so I live for.
That's part of the beauty of the game, right? Is you're learning the player as much as you are the character and how they like to play, which is fun. So, love that.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Definitely.
Okay, so Kickstarter comes out. We're starting August 26th, right? And going for a month. Do you have, I assume you have stretch goals, things like that. Do you have anything like that that you want to go ahead and plug here? Or however you want to do it?
Oh, this could be the big reveal on stretch goals. Yeah. So, yeah, we haven't told anyone yet, but... So our stretch goals are, so component wise, we're going to throw in some, hopefully some divider cards. So to kind of break up the characters, have a nice little organization in the box, get a bunch of like info on there about complexity, you know, move sets, that kind of thing. And then on a similar note, but full reference cards. So we want to get like some big, full tarot sized, like reference cards that you hand to the opponent and they've got all your icons on them and all of the ability names and a little short description for those people who want to play kind of like right off the bat, very competitively. They can just look at the reference. They don't have to memorize it or keep asking how much your stuff does. Yep. And then gameplay wise. So for the solo modes, so I mentioned briefly, we got the like kind of chaotic map expansion. We actually have two new characters in there as well that are like equally kind of chaotic and definitely high complexity and just, you know, doing all kinds of wild things. And for both of those, we want to add solo modes as well. And so we haven't worked on their solo modes yet, but it's a stretch goal we have. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to like ship those too, because I think they're going to be weird solo modes to do because of how like zany those characters are to start with.
This is exciting, guys. I mean, this is fun. And I'm looking forward to it. I will be honest, like when we got the initial reach out and we got the like very brief email description of the game, I was like, all right, maybe like there's potential here, but then I will attest, like, as I've said a couple times, when you first sit down, you see it and you just open that first hand and you start to like lean over and you talk to your partner, the game immediately grabs you. And so for those who might be on the fence when they see this and they're thinking, I've got so many battlers, do I need another one? I think this one has its space and it sits unique from the rest. So again, kudos to you guys and wish you all the best with this going forward.
Thanks so much, Jared. It's been awesome talking with you.
For sure. Is there anything else you guys need to let listeners know as far as anything Kickstarter related? Is there a way to go ahead and save the page so that it can be notified when launch happens?
Yes. Yeah, our pre-launch page is up there. So if you look up Legends of the Arena or Toth Games on Kickstarter, you click the little notify button, we'll hit you up. There's also link outs to our Discord and that kind of stuff. So come drop us a line. We got our TTS mod up there, print and play. So you can try this stuff out right now.
Awesome. Very cool. And those links will be in the description as well. We'll make sure and get that down there. So to make it easy for you guys. But thank you guys again for coming on. Thank you to listeners. If you have feedback, hit me up, hit these guys up. We'd love to talk about it. But for now, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed. Your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.